Well, on one of our recent trips to Israel, we met Eli Rothstein, who leads Kav LaNoar. Kav LaNoar is an organization, an institution, that does amazing work when life is normal. Now that Israel is at war, the demand for their services has reached an all-time high. And to discuss all of that and to give us a comprehensive update from his perspective about what's happening now in Israel during the war, Eli Rothstein is with us live in our TNEC studio here at JM in the AM. A pleasure to welcome you to JM in the AM.
Thank you so much for having me.
Remind everybody, generally speaking, and we'll talk about the war, of course, in a moment. Generally speaking, what is Kav LaNoar?
Generally speaking, Kav LaNoar is an organization that creates accessible, high-quality mental health care across 5 cities in Israel, servicing about 10,000 people a year through our clinics that are backed by insurance and our school-based social-emotional learning groups and programming.
And it's been doing that for how many years?
It's been doing it almost 20 years.
Then Kav LaNoar, the demand for the services of Kav LaNoar have skyrocketed since the beginning of this war. And why is that?
Why is that? I think it's pretty obvious that we're all going through something, not just in Israel. Everybody's impacted by this war. I think this is the most transparent war that we've ever experienced, which means that we are all facing some sort of quote-unquote secondary trauma. We're all experiencing things that we've never thought we would see. And people are learning that they can reach out for help.
And how does this demand manifest itself in Israel? You hear from schools, you hear from communities, you hear from families, individuals. How does it work?
So I want to separate out, like you said, there's our normal day-to-day,
right,
and then there's the war stuff. So I want to separate it out, but answer both of those at the same time. In general, the way that people reach out to us is that we're the only English-speaking clinics in Israel that are backed by insurance. So that means that anybody that would want to come and they can't afford therapy, they can come to us and they can swipe their insurance cards and have their therapy covered. And then in the schools, they reach out to us because we're backed by the Ministry of Education. That's normal day-to-day stuff, and obviously that's been exacerbated by the war. Over the course of the past 2 or 3 months, we've hired 18 new therapists and expanded 12 new schools that we weren't in before the war. With that being said, there's this whole separate area of people that are directly affected by the war, people that's families either were taken hostage or killed or things that we should never know about. And when we look at, especially around the Gaza border, there wasn't really any services available, especially for the kibbutzim, because they're very, very insular in the way that they function. And at the beginning of the war, we got connected with the kibbutzim, and we actually started building out services together in partnership with the kibbutzim. And today, we're working across the Gaza border servicing the kibbutzim.
And based where? I mean, those therapists are not living in those kibbutzim, are they?
So the kibbutzim is really, really interesting. I keep telling people, from my perspective, growing up as a modern Orthodox kid here in America, a kibbutz was something like a story in the history books. Mm-hmm. It's not something that actually existed in my world. And what I learned is that there are some absolutely incredible kibbutzim. They're very, very insular. And the way that they work is they have this concept of the kibbutz industry, which in our world would be kibbutz community. But for them, it's they kind of have their factories that support the community. So they're the same thing.
The most well-known, of course, Be'eri with the printing industry.
That's the most well-known, I would say, across the Jewish community.
Right.
It is certainly not the largest factory across the Gaza border.
Because of what happened there, we've been hearing about it for 5 months.
Correct. Right. Correct. It's interesting because we've been hearing about a lot of the destruction, but we don't hear about the destruction within the factories. We don't hear like how that community is actually operating. So with that being said, you have these tens of thousands of people that were evacuated from the Gaza border, and then they were coming back in to their community, to their kibbutz, every single day for employment. So just imagine you were evacuated, which is one trauma. There's a war going on, another trauma. And then you have to go back into where you were evacuated from to watch that trauma unfold.
Yeah, you have to revisit where it all happened, so to speak.
Yeah.
By the way, was Kav LaNoar involved in the hotels? Was Kav LaNoar involved in going into certain places around Israel that were, you know, harboring all these refugees from the north and south and continue to, by the way, to do formal programming or offer formal services in that environment?
Yeah, it's an interesting question. So when I got connected with the kibbutzim, which must have been October 9th, 10th, I was miserable personally because I felt like here's my organization that's like servicing the Olim. And I felt like I'm just going to lose everything. Like, I'm not going to be able to fly to raise money. I'm not going to be able to expand our programming. The government's going to shut down. And for me, it was terribly depressing. And when I got connected with the kibbutzim, we actually started as like a small support group that I was running for the kibbutz leaders. So we had the treasurer of the kibbutz movement, we had the head of the kibbutz movement, the head of the kibbutz business movement, and a couple of their major lay leaders were in this group. And we were talking about how we can actually service these people, because they were literally, they still are, everywhere. From Eilat all the way up as far north as they're allowed to be. They're scattered everywhere. The communities are really broken apart, except for a few communities here and there. They're completely broken apart. And what we understood was our first line of defense is really the parents. If the parents aren't functional, how can they help their kids? And the parents were the ones that were going into the factories every day. So that allowed us to create an environment where we could actually work on the factory floors, giving therapeutic services, and then they can bring that back to their families.
Unbelievable. Ellie Rothstein's here, Kaval Noar. There are many, many families. I mean, you talked about, you mentioned hostage families. You mentioned those who've fallen in the war and the help that those families would need, of course. But the number of wounded and injured in Israel is now astronomical, certainly by Israeli standards, and much more than the prior groups and those two groups that I just mentioned. Do you find your therapists and your services being offered to that group specifically?
It's a really good question. A lot of people are trying to help out that group. It's a hard group to pin down because you have soldiers and you have their families, and then you have families that are just injured just from the rocket fire.
Right.
What we've done is...
And then you have different levels of injuries and wounds, so frankly, also.
Of course. Right. You have the people that are, you know, in the hospital. I think you had Leah Spitz yesterday.
Right.
With her son, which is, you know, on some level is not available for therapeutic assistance yet. They really, you know, they need to get their physical health back a little bit. But what we've done lately is that we've also started opening up support groups for them. Because oftentimes, before somebody's ready to go into therapy, he needs to have the skills to be able to be successful in therapy. He has to learn how to articulate himself and understand what's coming up for him and how to deal with that. And we're able to do that. Engender an environment within a group that we can actually teach those skills.
The old now's not the time to talk to them about this. It takes time sometimes just to get to that point that you just described. All right, so we're somewhat familiar now after a couple of conversations with you on the air about Kaval Noar. It's becoming more and more evident that the original goal was to service Olim and that the centers that you have, how many did you say around the country?
So we're in five cities across the country.
Five cities
across,
and this is all basically aimed at English speakers. At least that was the original goal or the way things were formulated. And now the question is, so what is Kaval Noar today? You just described what the last 5 months have been like, the groups that you're trying to service, and the way that you've incorporated areas, including the kibbutzim, into this whole picture that simply were not in the picture beforehand. So what is the status today? Are you now a stable, forward-moving organization with a plan and with a system that's in place, or like so many during the early parts of the war, things are still a bit haphazard?
Yeah, so one of the things when I started working at Kaval Noar, one of my focuses was to create a long-term, stable, scalable organization. And what that means to me, at least, is if we have to raise every dollar for services, then at some point we're not going to be able to raise any more money, we're not going to be able to scale and grow. And so over the past couple of years, what I've been doing is building these public-private partnerships where we're working with the insurance providers, we're working with the Ministry of Education, Ministry of Health. So we create these partnerships in which we have new funding sources, and those funding sources are specifically focused on the citizens.
Because they all have their own budgets, that's what I'm assuming, right?
Theoretically.
Right.
It's Israel.
On paper, they have their own budgets.
Correct. You know, you hear about one of the major insurance providers right now is over 3 billion shekels in debt.
Right.
And so in a normative world, that would mean bankruptcy. In the Israeli world, it means let's just go deeper into debt.
We'll find the money somewhere.
Sure, yeah.
Hey, it's a land of miracles, Ellie. You see them every day, don't
you? Yes, absolutely.
So go ahead, I'm sorry, yeah.
So by creating these public-private partnerships, it's allowed us to, first of all, be available for a lot more people. So as we're ready to scale up and grow and service more people, we already have these contracts in place, which allow us to service them without having to go out and raise millions and millions of dollars just for that one service.
Right.
Essentially, the money that we raise then goes into the growth of the organization as opposed to just servicing those one people today.
Understood. You're in the United States. That would indicate to many of us that there are financial needs for
that
the organization.
That doesn't mean I'm not fundraising anymore.
No, you're here now. I would assume that means there are financial needs for the organization.
Correct.
So are you establishing anything unique in terms of partnerships or campaigns, or is this a straightforward fundraising journey?
So we've established a lot of really interesting partnerships. I have to thank Cross River Bank has been a fantastic partner to us on so many different levels. The type of partnerships that we've been trying to create with these, let's call them financial, larger financial type of partners, is that we grow with them.
Right. So and hopefully they'll be a regular partner with you.
Yeah, we certainly hope forward, so. Right? Yeah. We've done that with a number of foundations and with Cross River Bank and, you know, some other larger names across the philanthropic world. And we're looking to do more of that because that allows us to grow. And also, sometimes they say if you raise too much money, you're not going to know what to do with it. And although we have tons and tons of projects that we need to do, but if we can have real partners to grow together with them, then they can feel the growth and experience it together with us as opposed to kind of just sitting on the side.
Right. Understood. And I'm assuming that philanthropic families, I mean, who normally do have foundations if they're at that level, but even those who don't, I assume they're all welcome to play a role in all this. And I would assume if they come to Israel, there would be something for them to actually see and tour and experience with you guys, right?
Yeah. So if I can, I'd love to share with you a little story.
Yeah.
So one of these groups that's been supporting us for a number of years, they were doing one of these classic missions. Mm-hmm. And oftentimes people ask me what's my opinion about these missions that are going down to see the kibbutzim, just to see the destruction. And it happens to be that I'm a little bit against that. I think just going to look at destruction, you miss the entire picture here. If you look at the kibbutz communities, if you look at what they're made up, you see that there's this destruction, but then they're rebuilding actively throughout this destruction. And I feel like people need to see the rebuilding more so than the destruction. Destruction is important, but you need to see the rebuilding. So this group came with us mid-February, and we went down south. We went to Kibbutz Erez, which was the first kibbutz that we were active in. In Kibbutz Erez, we're servicing every single employee on the factory and the rest of the kibbutz. There's about 200 people on the kibbutz itself. The CEO of the factory lives on the kibbutz. His name is Asher. And he said, I need people to come and see what we did. And he was the first person to come into our services. He was the first person to sit in one of our groups. And we get to the entrance of the kibbutz, and Kibbutz Erez is a closed zone. You have to have security clearance to be able to go in, and you have to have security clearance to leave the kibbutz. So Asher is sitting at the entrance of the kibbutz, and he says, he stops us, he says, today we're not going into my factory. Just follow me. So we just follow him. We didn't really know exactly what we were getting at. And he drives us up to a lookout point. Now, Kibbutz Erez is on the Erez border crossing. Yeah, it's not a 5-minute, it's you can see the border in maybe less than 5-minute walk mm-hmm. to the border crossing. And he says, I want to tell you about my son, Amir. And he says, my house is right there, just across the street. And Amir was 26. And he was in my house because his wife was due. She was expecting to have baby on October 7th or around that time. And they were living in our house. And at about 6:30 in the morning, he hears something going on in the Erez crossing, which is literally like across the street from them. And so he got up, got out of bed, grabbed his gun, and comes to this point where we were standing with Asher at that point, which is like a small lookout point just looking over the border. And he sees those white pickup trucks coming through with the terrorists. And he starts engaging them because he saw that something is off. Usually trucks are going in, not coming out. And he engaged these terrorists, and they were fighting back and forth, whatever it is. And he ran up to the back entrance of the kibbutz where they were trying to come in, and he locked the kibbutz closed, and he engaged them, and he was shot in the head and killed. And because of Asher's son,
26,
Amir,
you said.
26 years old, because of Amir, Kibbutz Erez basically didn't suffer any damage, at least physical damage.
Yeah, he saved them.
And what Asher said was, until I started working with you, with Kavli Noar, I didn't see any value in expressing what was going on for me. Just getting back to life, getting back to productivity. And I see that my productivity, my life has changed, learning how to articulate what's going on for me. And he started crying. And we were standing there with this head of the mission. And Asher shared, this is the first time in his life that he actually cried. And he never realized how valuable that was for him. So this is kind of what we're feeling and experiencing with them.
Interesting. And I would imagine a lot of the people, including many family members, as we discussed, of the injured and wounded, also have never really expressed themselves until they came in contact with your therapies and therapists. That's what I would guess.
Yeah, one of the things that they were very nervous about as we were building out this pilot in Erez was you have these employees, and they're kind of all levels of sophistication, however you want to say that.
Right.
Some of them are not the most articulate people in the world. You know, some of them are very, very simple people, and they were worried, what is that going to do? What type of dynamic is that going to create in the factory? And what it allows for is somebody who's having a difficult time that maybe couldn't have expressed, I need help or I don't need help or whatever it may be, can now share that, thereby becoming more resilient and more productive with their lives.
You know, it's interesting. You mentioned, just as an aside, you mentioned viewing destruction and in this case, viewing rebuilding. I would think, and I'd have to go through this, and I'm sure people will email me if I'm wrong, but most places of destruction in Jewish history that we visit, I don't think there's any rebuilding that there is to view, at least that I can think of. Although some people who've helped rebuild Eastern Europe might argue with me, but I don't think it's the same thing. Here, literally a town or towns, not eras, but thank God, but others that saw all this death and destruction, as you just described, are now going through a rebuilding. And I never thought of it like that, that has to be emphasized by those of us who, you know, who feel like we represent our brothers and sisters in this entire cause. And we have to focus on that when we visit them. And it's funny because now I think about it, because I was literally in touch with somebody from one of the kibbutzim this morning. And as you're saying this, I'm saying to myself, my gosh, you know, he is now so focused on rebuilding that you don't hear a word from him about anything having to do with what happened 5 months ago, or even all the time that the people of the town spent in the hotels. Now it's just looking forward, and as if there's just no time to waste thinking about the. There'll be time to remember, and there'll be time for anniversaries and everything else that we're known for in the Jewish tradition. But now it's really a time to move forward, and really emotionally, mentally, as Kavla Noar can testify, it's time for people to move forward when they're ready to move forward.
I think there's something really special that's going on right now that we need to see it more and more. I'm sorry, I come in with a million stories because this has been my life for the past few months.
That's why we invited you.
So I shared that I've been running the support group essentially since the beginning of the war. I believe we started the 10th or the 11th of October. And that's made up of the heads of the kibbutz movement, the leaders, and some of the lay leaders. And so one of the members of the group, his name is Gilad. He's from Kibbutz Eilon, which is way, way, way up north on the Lebanon border. He's been evacuated since day one. And this is somebody, he's in his almost in his 80s. He grew up in the kibbutz movement. He said to me that, you know, you read in the storybooks of these kids that grow up without seeing their parents except for mealtimes.
Right.
That was his life.
Right.
So we're sitting in the group. This is right before Hanukkah time. We're sitting in the group, and he gets very, very emotional during the group, and he asks if he can share something. He's a very respectful individual. He asks if he can share something, and of course, you know, that's what the group is for. Right. So he says, my entire life, there was no such thing as God in my life. My religion was Zionism. Build up the land of Israel and strengthen the borders. That was my religion. And here I am sitting in a support group run by an American Haredi kid where I never would have spoken to in my entire life. There was no reason why we should ever interact. And you're creating a new pathway for me to rehabilitate my life. At 80 years old, this is what I'm getting. He says the only explanation can be that not only is there a God in the world, but that we're getting somewhere near the times of Mashiach.
Wow.
And then the follow-up to that is he calls me on Hanukkah. Such a special guy, Gilad. He calls me on Hanukkah and he says, I want to wish you a Chag Sameach. So to me, of course, you know what?
Sure.
This is the first time in my life I've ever said Chag Sameach to anybody.
For any Chag.
For any Chag. And I think that this new cohesion, unity, respect is something that I've certainly never experienced it this way in my life, right. And I think this is something very special.
But the price that we have paid for it is steep, and I cannot stop focusing on that as much as I should, but the price has been so enormous. And, you know, and frankly, our soldiers, forget about average citizens that we know, you know, in certain areas of Israel, certainly, but really everywhere are on the front lines. We see plenty of terror attacks still. But our soldiers are still in the midst of this terrible danger and all these operations. And 5 months later, they're still going through, you know, what seems to us, you watch the videos, they seem like impossible strategies and operations. And they're doing it. And we just pray for their safety all the time.
And there's only so much that we know.
Right.
It's what we know is much more limited than what's actually going on.
I just always find it fascinating that I can't decipher anything when I see these videos. I can't even understand what they're doing and how they're doing it. They're so remarkable. Eli Rothstein's here, Kavla Noar. We should mention, what do people need to know? I mean, essentially, the organization needs to continue, needs financial support. There is a donate button on the Kavla Noar website. That's one way of doing it, right?
Yep.
Anything else people need to know in terms of supporting or anything?
Yeah, you know, when we talk about mental health, mental health is not something that is from today to tomorrow. You're not going to go to the doctor, get a diagnosis and some pills and be better. Right. This is something that's going to last for a long, long time. When we're looking at, you know, we spoke about Kibbutz Erez and the groups that we're doing in Kibbutz Erez, that in of itself is a 3 to 5 month process. And then that continues on for the next 12 to 18 months.
Right.
And as of right now, the government support for this is very, very minimal.
And it's funny you mentioned that, because the impression was when you started this conversation that there were partnerships with the government to try, at least in the majority sense, to take care of the funding that's necessary. And you're telling us that that's just not true. That if I think that 70, 80, 90% of your budget is taken care of by the Israeli government, we're way off.
Correct. The war changed everything in that sense.
Oh, for,
well. A great example here is all of the Ministry of Education budgets that were allotted for our type of programming, completely frozen for the war effort. And that you were told immediately
in October.
No, we weren't told that immediately. We had to find it out kind of backhanded when the government got their act together and made the decision.
Wow. And when was that? December?
That was mid-November.
Wow. And that literally cut the budget by 50%? Like, that's the real number?
Zero.
What do you mean zero?
They froze all budgets.
Oh, froze. I thought you said cut. Froze. They froze it.
Completely froze. Ministry of Education budget was completely frozen.
And for obviously, I don't want to say good, but understandable reasons.
Yes.
There's a lot of very important things that need funding right now. My gosh. All right. So, kavlanoar.org, KAVLNOAR.org. We highly recommend that you keep Kavla Noar going. They are, as you heard, they are spending a tremendous amount of time helping people who specifically have been through terrible episodes over the last 5 months. And I'm talking about their mental health. And then in addition, they're trying to keep their regular programming in order and keep it going full speed ahead with schools and communities. So please donate and donate generously by going to kavlanoar.org, Kav, K-A-V, Lenoar, L-N-O-A-R.org. Also, you're here until when?
I am here until Thursday.
Because there are people in this audience who might, in all seriousness, want to interact with you, hear more about this face-to-face, et cetera.
Absolutely.
Through the website, or how do they reach you? Or
yeah, they can email me. That's usually pretty decent.
And that would be?
E-L-L-I-E at kavlanoar.org.
Ellie at kavlanoar.org if you want to get in touch with Ellie Rothstein. Now, early on in the war, during the time that I was traveling to Israel pretty regularly, so each time I went, it felt like there was a different mood in the country. I mean, people have heard me say this a million times. My son actually interviewed me about it. I mean, from shock to, you know, and depression, and not using it in the clinical sense, just saying in general the way things felt in Israel. And then, of course, as the war started, the defiant mood and the unity. I mean, there's a lot of different. What would you say? You've just been there recently. What is it like now? We're now in March of 2024. We have Purim coming up. Adar, or in this case, a double dose of Adar, is supposed to inject an air of happiness into the Jewish world. How would you describe Israel today?
I can't just describe Israel, right? There is a demographic shift across Israel. So you're just reminding me, when we started in one of the kibbutzim, our therapist met with the head of the kibbutz. And one of our therapists, she said, Yachad Ninatzeach, which everybody's seeing everywhere.
Right. And we will be victorious together.
And the kibbutz was furious. Don't say that in front of us. We've already lost. Our lives are terrible now. Hostages killed.
There's no victory here, right?
She said, my husband, just from October 7th to October 30th, went to over 150 funerals just for close friends and family. So within that demographic, the mood is terrible. There's rebuilding is just starting. They don't know what the war is going to change. They're a little bit pessimistic in that they feel the government is fickle and is going to pull out and it's not going to be done.
Will they be protected?
Will they be protected? But then as you get further and further away from the border, and also religiously further away from the border, so then there's a certain level of optimism. You know, this is, again, in my lifetime, I haven't seen a war like this. There have been many wars, but I haven't seen a war like this. And the certain level of optimism that we're creating a new paradigm in the country.
And when you say that, you're talking about the unity. The way people get along.
Yes.
The way they regard each other.
Yes.
A feeling that you think could last a while?
I think so. I do think so. I think that new relationships and respect has been created, again, that I haven't seen personally until now.
Where do you live? What city?
In Yerushalayim.
Oh, really? I didn't know you're Jerusalem-based.
Yes.
Eli Rothstein, Kavla Noar. The website is kavlnoar.org. Israel is now at war, and Kavla Noar is doing their best on a personal level, on the with the schools and kibbutzim, support groups, and more to bring the necessary therapies and therapists to help with the mental health of the people of Israel. That's the bottom line. They've been doing this for 20 years. You can imagine, as we've been discussing, how much more their services are now needed in Israel over the last 5 months and moving forward. So again, if you want to donate, it's kavlanoar.org. If you want to get in touch with Ellie, E-L-L-I-E at kavlanoar.org. He's here till Thursday and welcomes any face-to-face encounter if you think that you could be helpful or provide some type of start to a long partnership and relationship with Kavla Noar. And I know there are a lot of people in this audience who are very sensitive to what you're doing and understand the value of trying to help people in the mental health space. So please, God, people in this community will be generous and will be forthcoming. Anything else you'd like to add, sir, about all this?
I keep talking about groups. Mm-hmm. And I think that's something really important to be thinking about is... not everybody needs to be sitting in therapy. Not everybody needs to go to therapy. You know, you asked, how are we dealing with these people coming in and out of Gaza? Right. How are, you know, and oftentimes the power of a group, the power of understanding that there are other people with me and other people that can support me, that creates a certain strength that we don't always get to see in our lives. And we've seen the magic of groups through the kibbutzim and through so many of the different schools that we're in. And I think that's something to be thinking about, is not just think about therapy, but think about mental well-being.
Right. It's another way of translating or explaining b'yachad ninatzeach. It's yes. Not just the unity on the war or the war effort. It's also the, as you say, the togetherness that one feels when there's someone out there for them, even if they don't necessarily need the acute services that others might.
Absolutely.
I very much appreciate the visit. Continue to hatzlacha. Let us know how we could be helpful. And I hope that Kavla Noar, you know, they always say that the best thing would be if the organization didn't have to exist. And I think we have to give you a different type of blessing. And that is that as the need continues to grow, hopefully you'll be able to grow and be as strong as ever.
Amen. Thank you so much.
Our thanks to Eli Rothstein. Go to Kavla Noar. Give and be generous. We will put this on the NahumSiegel.com Chesed page. NahumSiegel.com/Chesed will have it. And we recommend that if you want to be instrumental in assisting the war effort, Kavla Noar is a great place to start. KAVLNOAR.org. Donate button right there, prominent on the homepage. More coming up. You're listening to a Tuesday morning edition of JM in the AM.